It's often said that the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden got away in Afghanistan because the U.S. turned its attention to Iraq. Not so, says Richard Haass in his new book, War of Necessity, War of Choice. Richard Haass is now president of the Council on Foreign Relations. He was a special assistant to the first President Bush during the first war in Iraq, the well-advised War of Necessity in the title, and later he was Colin Powell's director of policy planning at the State Department during the second one, the ill-advised War of Choice, as he would have it. The conventional wisdom is the U.S. had al-Qaeda on the run, lost focus, and invaded Iraq instead. Richard Haass, what's wrong with that?
It's wrong for a couple of reasons, Robert. The United States did not do a lot in Afghanistan simply because the Bush administration at the top layer was strategically pessimistic about Afghanistan. They really thought that no investment there would pay off. And I remember sitting at the National Security Council meetings making the case that we could do more. And it was essentially no sale. It was seen as helpless and as hopeless. But they weren't hoarding their forces for Iraq, as many people have charged, simply because they all thought Iraq was going to be easy. If you recall, they did not follow the Powell Doctrine. They went in with very small number of troops. They did very little planning. So it wasn't that they were saving, if you will, all their resources for a rainy day. They actually thought Iraq was going to be quick and easy.
Your point is that the insufficient force the U.S. had in Afghanistan had its own theoretical virtue to the people who put it there. They wanted to fight with a small, light force rather than with hundreds of thousands. It would have been that light even without the war in Iraq.
And also, they didn't want a nation build in Afghanistan. They wanted to keep their goals very limited to go after al-Qaeda. They simply didn't see Afghanistan as a good investment for the United States.
But is it fair to say that if we had never gone to war in Iraq, then the U.S. might have been able to send more troops to Afghanistan once there was a Taliban resurgence?
We could have sent more troops to Afghanistan at any point if the appetite had been there. Once we did get heavily involved in Iraq, I take your point, then it did become something of a distraction. We really couldn't fight two large wars of this sort at the same time.
You describe yourself when you were at the State Department as 60-40 against going to war in Iraq. And you addressed the question, first of all, should you have resigned when the U.S. went to war in Iraq? You say no. Why not?
I don't believe you can resign when you're 60-40 against things. You'd be resigning every other day of your life. Lots of decisions are close calls. In my view, you resign when it's 90-10 or 100-0. And for me, that would have been Iraq, say, in the case where we knew that Saddam Hussein did not have weapons of mass destruction, yet the president was going ahead. If that had been the case, that would have been grounds for resignation. The other reason you resign is when a series of issues goes against you, and you simply wake up one morning and you go, what am I doing here? I'm the odd man out almost every day. But I decided to stay. Colin Powell decided to stay because we thought we could still have influence on some of the important but secondary issues by staying inside.
But you had become an odd man out on Iraq, on Afghanistan, on peace initiatives between Israel and the Palestinians, on a whole variety of things. You were the odd man out.
Yes, as you go through that list, it's painful to hear it. I believed in diplomacy. Mm-hmm. I believed in multilateralism. Mm-hmm. I believed in institutions. I did not believe in the Iraq war. I thought the United States did have viable alternative policy options, and I feared that by going to war, it would, to use the phrase that Colin Powell and I bandied about, take the oxygen out of the room of American foreign policy. So yes, on virtually every major foreign policy issue, I found myself on a very different page from my colleagues.
Even so, it was worth remaining in there and trying to win a smaller battle somewhere down the line?
To win smaller battles, but still significant battles. But after 2.5 years, I finally called it a day. At some point, it wasn't simply that I got tired of being called an enabler when I got home at night, mm-hmm. but also too many days I would spend arguing with my colleagues against policies, and then that night having to go on this or that radio or television show defending the very policies I had argued against.
Arguing against.
Those take a lot out of you day in, day out.
There's a recurring theme to your experiences in both the first Bush presidency and the second, which is how often the assumptions of policymakers, typically based on intelligence analysis, is completely wrong. Will Saddam Hussein actually go ahead and invade Kuwait? Will Saddam Hussein, does he have weapons of mass destruction? What will he do? What is the systemic fix that should be applied to avoid, at worst case, sending troops marching off into quicksand based on faulty intelligence?
The most important thing is to be aware of the assumptions and then to challenge them, because otherwise assumptions, it's interesting how they pervade everything you see, everything you interpret. They can really undermine logical thinking.
Well, Richard Haass, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Richard Haass is the author of War of Necessity, War of Choice, a memoir of two Iraq wars.